So I got seed starting envy. We
the greenhouse is full.
We're a little hotter down here than other areas. And some of my YouTube buddies and everybody else has already got plants up, ready to go in the ground or getting them in the ground. And we're kind of behind everybody a little bit. But I spent all day Friday in the greenhouse filling her up with plants. And these is the ones that's furthest along I got. This is some Flame Star cauliflower here. And they coming along good.
They look good.
I think I just forgot to plant that last row back there.
I think you did too, but besides that, it looks like you got about 99% germination. I see one cell empty there.
Yeah, there's a couple empty cells.
I got one coming up there. I don't see but one.
But pretty good germination.
Yep.
Pretty good germination overall, so happy with that. You always want to have full seed flat. You don't ever like it when you get just a, you know.
I think sweat got in your eyes on that last one.
Sweat might have got in my eyes. Something happened there, but time to get them seeds started.
It's time.
I planted, and we'll talk about this a little more later. I planted cauliflower. I got cabbage. I got broccoli, collards, turnips, mustard, beets, a little bit of it all planted.
I see that. Now, I'm going to direct seed my mustard.
You're going to direct seed your mustard?
I'm going to direct seed my mustard and my turnips.
Well, the mustard I planted in the seed tray was the curled mustard, and I'm just going to plant me a little spot of it, and so I wanted to transplant it, get it going a little faster.
I'm going to plant some red mustard.
Yeah, it's got a little bite to them.
That's why I like some bite.
A little bite. Let's say hey to everybody. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Row by Row Garden Show. I'm Travis.
And I'm Greg.
And we're excited to have you with us tonight. We've got a good show planned. We're going to talk about some fertilization requirements or fertilizer programs, so to say, for a couple of our most popular fall brassicas out there, ones that some people tend to struggle with. Kind of give you some a breakdown of what you need to expect to be given to those plants to get them to produce like you would expect them to. Before we do that, we always have a little show and tell. We're talking about the seeds and the germ rate, and I noticed this. So several of our other YouTube channels that we partner with, they are growing seeds in our seed trays. Everybody likes their seed trays, but they're growing not just our seeds from other companies, and I won't mention those companies' names, but in their videos, and they're not really pointing it out because they're not trying to create a competition, but I could tell that our seeds germinate a lot faster and more consistently than the other seed companies that some of these guys are using.
You pay for what you get sometimes.
Pay for what you
get. You can go on eBay, no doubt about it. You can go on eBay or Amazon. You can buy seeds cheaper than what we got. And it's what it is somebody in their carport packing up seeds in there, and they're not doing it properly. When we have invested in a seed room where we keep everything a certain percent humidity and a certain temperature, and we got everything like it needs to be, and plus we germ test everything on certain dates, we got spreadsheets and we keep up everything and we do it right. And that's the reason our seeds cost a little bit more, because you pay for what you get.
All of our seeds get germ tested every 9 months. And we post, I always tell people this, whoever you buy your seeds from, if they don't have the cojones to put the germ rate on the back of it, something's wrong. So we put it on the back of everyone so you know what to expect there. Sweet corn. I got sweet corn coming up about that tall. It's growing fast. It is growing fast.
It's going to be interesting to see if you make that or not. I mean, I'm pulling for you, but you're going to be cutting it close.
I don't think so. I'm thinking early October or mid-October or so. I think I'll have plenty of time. In the past, at the expo, we had planted it as late as mid-September and been okay.
I believe I transplanted at that time, but you might be correct. I'm pulling for you. It may be all right.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be all right. Cover crops, I got some cover crops still looking good. I got some sun hemp and some sorghum sedan about waist tall. I just planted another big old 40 by my main big garden plot, the one that does the best for me or has over the years, the one that's been there the longest. I really hadn't cover cropped in a while, so I'm squeezing in some sorghum there. It probably won't ever get knee high because I'm gonna plant my carrots there. and maybe some onions and stuff. But I'm squeezing in a quick little sorghum run there.
Just I'm doing the same thing. So I always get, I got my garden cleaned up. I got cover crops on everything but one spot. And I'm getting ready for my fall garden. So I'm in that little bit of transition period. But we always get people talking about, hey, we got time to plant a cover crop. Well, I just planted all cover crops. I planted sorghum sedan, I planted sun hemp, I planted buckwheat. I even planted some mustard on some of them. I got plenty of time with these sun ones because as soon as they come up, probably within 2 to 3 weeks, I'm gonna cut them back in.
Right.
So we got plenty, you got plenty of time left.
It's better than leaving it bare.
Yeah, if you can live in the southern United States, even if you live in a zone 6 or 7, I still think you got time to put a short-term summer cover crop in. These summer cover crops are different than the winter cover crops. These things grow fast. You get them up, terminate them, as they say, or get rid of them, turn them in. Be fine.
Especially if you're waiting like me, waiting to plant stuff like carrots, and which would be October, or even onions, which would be November, you got plenty of time to get a good cover crop off. The other thing I've been hearing a lot of people, and it's that time of year, talk about having nematode problems.
Yeah. And if you grow okra, you're going to have some nematode problems.
Okra, tomatoes, they can get on those type of things. Yeah. Now, last year, we did several videos, and we talked a lot on the show about the broadleaf mustard, using that as a cover crop to get rid of the nematodes. And it worked really well for me last year. I haven't noticed any nematode problems this year, so I haven't planted any broadleaf mustard yet. If I do notice any, telltale signs, go out there and pull up one of your okra plants. And when you do, if you see them knots on the roots, you know you got a problem.
Don't panic, because everybody has a little bit of that, but it does indicate a problem.
So I haven't seen any yet. If I do, you can get that stuff growing fast. But, check the roots. If you've got some, plant you a cover crop of broadleaf mustard. The trick is there, as we talked about last year, you got to chop it up and till it in.
Quick.
You don't have a whole lot of time there. You want those leaves to start releasing those chemicals.
And the good thing about mustard, and this is what I'm going to do, so I got mustard growing two of my bigger plots. Well, I can eat that mustard as it comes out, and when it's nice and tender, we can eat it, and also you till it back in as a cover crop. So it's twofold.
Yeah, and mustard's one of those cut and come again type crops. Yep. You can cut it and it'll grow back.
And it's fairly inexpensive. I mean, it's one of the cheaper cover crops you can put out there. Speaking of mustard, we have it now available in quarter pound packs.
Right, on the website.
On the website.
It's not in the cover crop section. It's in the green section where the other mustard is. But if you want to grow your, we got two. We got the curled, and then the Florida broadleaf is the traditional flat leaf mustard. A lot of people like to just scatter plant that. So you can get a quarter pound of that if you just want to, throw your little plot out.
Now, a quarter pound is probably enough for most people if you're going to broadcast it, or even if you're going to direct seed it.
Got your little raised bed, perfect.
And it's not, less than 10 bucks.
Something like that, yeah. All right. So this week, we're going to get into talking about growing some fall brassicas in detail and some growing strategies, some fertilizer recommendations. And these are, I picked four just to keep it simple this week. We're not going to talk about all fall crops, but these four brassicas are ones that we seem to get more questions about, people having more issues with. So the NC State or North Carolina State University has some really good information out there on programs for different crops and stuff, but a lot of their stuff is on a per acre basis. And so I went in there and kind of dug around and broke it down to make it more sense for us smaller guys.
Common mistake most people make on these brassicas is not enough fertilizer.
A lot of them are very heavy feeders.
They are. And you don't think about cabbage. Cabbage almost has close to the same nitrogen requirement as corn does.
It does.
It's unbelievable how much nitrogen it takes to make one of those big old pretty heads of cabbage.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of cabbage growing around here, and most of it, or a lot of it, goes to coleslaw.
Yep.
So if you go to Kentucky Fried Chicken or somewhere and eat coleslaw, there's a good chance that cabbage wasn't growing far from us.
We have a plant here in the county we live in that makes that coleslaw.
All right. So
we grow a lot of fresh market cabbage too. We grow more cabbage in this area that we live in right here than anywhere this side of the Mississippi River.
Before we get into each individual crop, I want to talk about just standard row spacing here on these type of, we're going to be talking today about cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, and Brussels sprouts in particular. Row spacing on these, I almost with all of my fall crops, because it makes it easier to go in there and rotate, and I can leave my drip all, I don't move my drip along my main line. I go with a standard 3 foot spacing on everything. And then that way, when I do get rid of a crop of cabbage and I want to plant some beets there, I pull up that tape, leave it connected, cultivate the area, put the tape right back down, and boom, that's quick. Lettuce, same thing. So for fall in general, for your cool weather stuff, I do a standard 3 foot row space.
I do too.
Now, some of these things I will plant on double rows. We're not talking about lettuce today, but I definitely plant those on double rows. But some of them, as I'll mention as we get through here, I found don't do good on double rows, broccoli being one of those. Some of them need a little more space there, and they just do better on single rows.
Cauliflower.
Right. So you can plant some of these on double rows. I wouldn't do the double row unless you had drip tape. You really need the tape to pull off the double row to get that water.
Plant a foot apart. And that's easy when you lay your drip tape out there and you turn it on. Start seeing that water bubble up there, you got exactly 12 inches apart. If you're doing transplants, just put your plant right on top of that 12 inch spacing.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah. Almost all my fall transplants, with the exception of maybe lettuce and beets, I do a foot apart on all those, right on top of the emitter, boom. So let's get into some of these programs here. And we're gonna start off with cabbage, okay? So cabbage, you see people, them big old heads of cabbage you grow at the grocery store, or you see at the grocery store, it takes a lot of nitrogen to get a cabbage head that big. And even when, I don't really try to get them that big. I'm like just a more normal size, like a kid's basketball. But if you really shoot the nitrogen to them, you can get them that big.
Yep.
So let's talk about our program here that we found. So let's start off. So with all of these, we're gonna give a pound per 100 feet, so per 100 row feet, recommendation of what you should apply at planting.
Okay. Now we're talking about transplants, so we're not talking about direct seeding, because cabbage is one of those things that grows better and just does a lot better as a transplant.
Yeah, all these things today, cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, we're all talking about transplants.
If you're not able to grow your own transplants, then buy you some. I just would not direct seed any of these right
there. Hold that there for me. So, with cabbage, at planting, especially if you got drip, this makes it real easy, inject 1.5 pounds of this 20-20-20 right here per 100 feet.
That's easy.
That's easy. Okay, so you're gonna do that at planting. That phosphorus, that potassium there is gonna help encourage some root development, nitrogen.
That's a great starter fertilizer. Another thing too, when you put this in there, that drip system, you're not wasting any fertilizer because it comes up and puts it right there at the root system, takes it up, jumps and goes. Makes you look like a hero.
And then we're gonna hit it two more times. We're gonna hit it at 2 weeks and 5 weeks after transplanting. With that, we don't necessarily need the phosphorus and the potassium anymore. We're gonna come in with just a straight nitrogen source. And you may have some that you like to use, but as far as a good straight nitrogen source, that Chilean nitrate works really well. So you can use something that's comparable with the amount of nitrogen, but 1 pound of the Chilean nitrate per 100 feet at 2 and 5 weeks. On the cabbage.
Yep.
So we're gonna give it a complete fertilizer to start with, then we're just gonna pop it with some nitrogen at 2 and 5 weeks. Now cabbage likes boron as a micronutrient. It likes a boron supplement, and if you're looking for a good place to get some boron, that micro boost right there will definitely
do it. Not only has it got boron in it, but it's got everything else that cabbage needs. So it really makes it simple, and it takes all the guesswork out of it for you and everybody else. You don't have to be a soil scientist to figure out what you need. You take that micro boost, shoot it in there, it's a full meal deal.
Yeah, and the micro boost, you can just put you a quarter cup, half a cup, whatever. The rates are on the label there. Mix that in, and you're good to go.
So it's not going to burn. It's just going to pump that plant up, and you're going to be amazed at the results you see from that micro boost.
So pretty simple here. Pretty simple outline, at least I think so, for the cabbage. 1.5 pounds complete to start, and then 1 pound of nitrogen there at 2 and 5 weeks. And then we want to add some of that micro boost in there to get some boron. So that's our cabbage. And speaking of cabbage, just to give you an idea which ones I'm growing the ones I have started now. I've got the Rio Grande Red started. I've got some of this Charleston Wakefield started and some of this Cheer started. That's the three I'm growing this fall.
I'm assuming you're going to share all these with me.
I'll share a few.
I'm assuming that, yeah. Being as it is my greenhouse.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do. All right, the second one we're going to get into is broccoli, okay? And broccoli is, before we get in the program, broccoli is tough around these parts because it can strike off hot anytime. And I was talking to one of my wife's friends. Her husband is a big farmer over in Barwick, big produce farmer. And he grows some broccoli, but he don't really like to do it. He said it's just tough because, you know, broccoli needs kind of a, not a freezing period, but a nice cool extended weather period. And if it strikes off hot, it'll bolt and the heads won't get as big as they need to. It can be tough in this area of the country.
Yeah, it can. And when it's ready, it's ready.
When it's ready, it's ready. You ain't got a whole lot of time.
You got a big window in there.
So let's talk about broccoli. Very similar to cabbage with a slightly different rate on the at planting delivery here. So we're going to just do 1 pound of the 20-20-20 at planting per 100 feet. And then with the broccoli, we're going to hit it at 3 and 5 weeks with some Chilean nitrate. 1 pound per 100 square feet or 100 row feet. Now the kicker on the broccoli, here's an extra recommendation. Now this is completely optional, but this is a pro tip recommendation I read online, is to hit the broccoli with some calcium nitrate when the heads get to be about a quarter size.
Calcium nitrate, huh.
Now you might be asking, where can I get some calcium nitrate? And we happen to have some on the way.
We got some on the way in 10-pound bags.
In 10-pound bags.
Should be here within the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay, so by the time those crops need it, we should have it, and you know we're going to ship it to you as fast
as we
can.
And we'll shoot out an email blast when we get it in, telling everybody we got it.
That calcium nitrate is going to be great for tomatoes in the spring, but some of these cool weather crops like it a lot too. So when the heads get a quarter in size, they say to pop it with some of this calcium nitrate, and that'll do wonders for you. Broccoli also needs boron just like cabbage, so that micro boost is gonna help there.
Now the micro boost, because you don't have the timing down there on a micro boost. Now this is what I would do. I would hit it at least every 2 weeks and maybe every week with the micro boost from the time it's planted. I don't think you can hurt anything by putting it out there.
So this is the micro boost here, and you can inject it when you water. You can inject just the micro boost. A lot of times we talk about adding it with other fertilizer, but you can inject just this and it'll do fine. Or like you do sometimes, put it in a little pump sprayer, take the tip off and just drizzle it down by the plants.
And if you're a small gardener and you just got some raised beds that you're growing a little bit of stuff in, hey, put you a couple of 3 ounces, let's see, 2 to 4 ounces, I believe, and a gallon of water, put it in your watering can and just pour it on there. Works
Go
fine.
For it. All right, so that's broccoli. Very similar to cabbage, just a little different on the weeks there and a little different on the initial application. Now let's get into our third one, which is cauliflower. Mm-hmm. Actually, let me mention what varieties of broccoli I'm growing, just so everybody knows. So we got two. We've got this Green Magic and we've got the Arcadia. The Green Magic is a more heat tolerant variety. It's gonna do better for you in early fall when it's still a little warm. Mm-hmm. When it gets cooler, so that's what I got started now.
Yep.
Once it cools down a little bit, I'm gonna switch over to this Arcadia, which is a cooler weather broccoli. So those two there. Now cauliflower, okay? Cauliflower, from what I've read, does really well. It likes rich, healthy soil that's full of organic matter.
All these brassicas, if you had to pick the ideal soil for them, would be a well-drained soil with high organic matter.
So if you've just got a nice big cover cropped area and some well-drained soil and you got that cover crop incorporated in the soil, that's gonna do wonders for some of these.
Mm-hmm. Now, in all these brassicas, when we talk about, one thing not to forget is pH. So the ideal pH for all of these is between 6.0 and 6.5.
That's right.
So if you hadn't got it adjusted toward that, say, in that range there, make preparations to do that. It's real easy to do. But make sure you understand where you're at before you start adding anything to get your pH up. But the ideal, 6.0, 6.5.
Okay. The cauliflower is almost identical to the broccoli. We're doing 1 pound of 20-20-20 at planting. We're doing 1 pound of Chile nitrate, except we're just doing it here at 4 weeks. We're just doing one application there. So 1 pound of Chile nitrate at 4 weeks. And then the cauliflower, we talked about the cabbage and the broccoli needing boron. Cauliflower needs boron, really needs magnesium, and it needs molybdenum.
Molybdenum.
And our MicroBoost has all three of those. That.
So there again, you back it at weekly, 10 days or 2 weeks. I prefer weekly, shoot it with the MicroBoost.
That's right. That'll do it good. So, cauliflower, as far as what we've got planted, I showed you my tray of the...
I'm going to let you hold them up there. But I'm going to tell you what, if you really want to grow something that's fun to grow... And we've grown all three of these varieties before at the same time. And you talking about making a splash of color or something really fun. You grow you a white one, a yellow one, and a purple at the same time, man, it's off the chart.
So we've got the Flame Star, which is what I showed you earlier, the Snowball and the Graffiti. And all of these have a germ rate listed of around 95%. But from my experiences, what I've seen other channels, a lot of people are getting around 100. So good germination on these guys here. So that was the cauliflower. And with cauliflower, one more thing is the wrapping of the leaves. If you get too much sunlight, especially on the white ones, it can start to discolor. And if you grow white cauliflower, you expect it to be white. So the Snowball does really good at wrapping that head so it doesn't stays nice and white for you. Mm-hmm. Then our last one here
is probably the most challenging one to grow, but it very well can be one of the most rewarding too.
And here we're talking about Brussels sprouts, okay? And Brussels sprouts need cool weather. They gotta have it. They gotta have it to make them nice, tight sprouts. Now, I have failed at Brussels sprouts many a times. I have also grown some pretty good ones many a times.
But you know what's one of my most favorite foods to eat? If you've not had roasted Brussels sprouts with some sauteed onions, a little bit of that bacon in there, you have missing out on life.
It's fine stuff.
It's good stuff. However, it can be challenging to grow. Of the ones we mentioned here today, the Brussels sprouts are the toughest.
Yeah, they can be. Brussels sprouts, like I said, like cooler weather, if it's too hot, and I've had this happen before, what will happen is the sprouts you get will just be kind of loose and feel empty. There won't be anything in there. To get the nice, tight sprouts that are almost like mini cabbages, you need some cool weather.
They take a long time to grow. Heck, they can take 100 days easy to grow Brussels sprouts. And anytime you get something that takes that long, you can be challenged with some insect problems. Flea beetles, worms, things like that. So you got to make sure you stay on a good insect program with any of these, but especially Brussels sprouts.
So we can plant Brussels sprouts kind of two times. We can plant them in fall and we can plant them in late winter. If you can get some in the ground in January, sometimes they'll come off in spring. If you don't have a super early hot spring, you can plant them. We can plant them in January and get them off. But fall is the ideal time, early fall. So the fertilizer requirements for Brussels sprouts. Brussels sprouts are the heaviest feeder of the four we have talked about.
Did not
so far. So similar program, but a little heavier on the application there. So Brussels sprouts going to want 2.5 pounds. Of that complete 20-20-20 at planting time. So twice the rate of some of these others out there. And then instead of just doing one other application of nitrogen or two others, we're gonna hit these guys every 4 weeks or every month with 1.5 pounds of some straight nitrogen, or excuse me, of the calcium nitrate. So for Brussels sprouts, they recommend the calcium nitrate, which we're getting in 1.5 pounds every 4 weeks. Hmm. And the calcium is supposed to really help the sprout development there. And as with everything we mentioned today, that MicroBoost is going to be great for these fall crops.
Now, I've grown the Jade Cross before.
Mm-hmm. And I've got some
that's
of those starting.
The standby that I normally grow, but I have not grown.
We've got these red ones that you won't really find a whole lot of other places called Red Bull Brussels sprouts. Some red ones. I've got some of those started as well. Looking forward to trying those. So let us know in the comments what you're growing this fall, what varieties you're growing. And if you got any extra tips out there on how to get some good cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, or Brussels sprouts, we'd love to hear them. We're always looking to learn new stuff. So let us know what you think in the comments below. We got some questions to get to.
We do.
And if we answer your question on the show, send us an email with your address to custserve@hosstools.com, and we'll be glad to send you a nice little prize.
Question number one comes from the Machining Man, and he says, the tarp that we sell looks like a mosquito breeding ground during rainy periods. What is your experience?
So here's my experience. I have right behind, if you watch my videos, you'll see like some pine trees right behind my garden, or right on the other side of the pine trees. I'm talking 20 feet. There's two big old ponds. So I've got plenty of mosquito breeding grounds. And yes, the tarp, if it comes a heavy rain, those tarps will hold a little bit of water, but it usually evaporates pretty quick. I haven't noticed any mosquitoes on top of the tarps at all. No problems with that. The water usually dries up pretty quick. Haven't seen any problems with that. But while I'm talking about that, I want to mention this. I've had a lot of people comment on the videos to say they would never use a tarp because it's going to kill all their soil biology and bake their soil. Well, I haven't done a temperature test, but I can tell you this. My soil that's underneath the tarp is a lot cooler than that soil that's sitting out in the sun.
Well, I'm gonna have to complain here. When we first started this, I thought the same thing. In my mind, this is the way an old man's mind works. That black is gonna attract the heat, and it's gonna heat up underneath there.
It does, but the tarp's absorbing it on.
But the black has, and that's the reason we have black shingles on houses. That black actually blocks the sunlight from going through there. It shades it out. So it's actually shading it out instead of heating it up. So it doesn't have that effect that I originally thought, because several times I've went out there in the middle of the day, stuck my head underneath there just to see how hot it was, and it's not like it's baking the soil or anything.
Yeah.
It's not the effect you're getting. Now, if you want to do that, you do that with a clear top. Clear top.
Create a greenhouse effect. Tarp. Right. Yeah. And I can tell simply, if I go out in my garden in August and have to get on my knees and do anything, I better be wearing long pants, and I can't stay there for long because that sandy soil gets hot.
Hot.
You can't walk on it barefoot or nothing. But when I pull that tarp back, you can waller on it all you want to, and it's not going to be hot. So,
yeah.
It doesn't bake it. Second question here is from the McLeod Homestead, and this is a really good question here. Are your seeds directly for the southern states, or can people like me in northern Pennsylvania grow them? I would really like to try the Cherokee pumpkin or the blue pumpkins we have.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, you can grow pumpkins better than we can here. All the seeds that we have can be grown anywhere. Now, you just got to change your planting date, and sometimes we get caught up on what we do. And we, like, you know, in the fall, we're lagging behind everybody. Everybody's done got their fall crops in. In the springtime, we're jumping ahead of them. Mm-hmm. So the fact of the matter is, just understand what zone you're in and your plant dates, and all these work fine. And you can actually do better than we can on certain things like pumpkins. Pumpkins are challenging for us. We have to grow them in the springtime. We can't grow them in the fall. You can grow them up there, and when it starts getting cold weather, they start coming off, and that's when everybody wants pumpkins. So to answer your question, yes, you can grow everything we can grow. Sometimes you can grow it better, and sometimes you can't. Just understand what your zone is, look to your planting dates, and keep up with all that. You'll have it licked.
I like to tell people this. So we carry a lot of disease-resistant varieties because we have a lot of disease and insect pressure down here. But that doesn't mean you can't grow those disease-resistant varieties up north. Just because you have less disease pressure, growing a disease resistant variety is going to perform just as well for you than it does down here. And you can actually probably grow a better garden than we can down here because you might not be fighting as much battles as we are.
So, absolutely.
All right. Good show tonight. Put something in the comments. Let us know what you think about fall planting, what you got going on, and we will see you guys next week.
Take care.